Good evening. The Legislative Commission on Pensions and Retirement will come to order. It's March 14th, Tuesday. We have not a real long agenda. We're going to still try and get out at our 7 o'clock time. We do not have a quorum yet to pass any bills, so we're missing one senator. But we are going to go ahead and start and hear some testimony, and then hopefully some of the senators will be checking in. So welcome, Representative Poppy. Senator Sparks, how are you? Please come up. It's Senate File 26, the Austin Fire Relief Association. Who would like to start?
Well, thank you,
Representative
Madam
Poppy. Welcome.
Thank you so much. Thank you, members of the commission. We have a bill before you that hopefully will be able to be understood based on the brief that was done by Ms. Barth. It was very thorough and very complete. So if you're able to review that ahead of time, you kind of know what the situation is. But this is a situation where our Austin Fire Department has both a full-time fire department and a on-call. So it's not necessarily volunteer, but it's a paid on-call fire department. And they've been able to split the money and be able to distribute it. And they were doing that for a number of years. And then in 2013, the law changed, but they were not made aware of what that change was. So they continued to do the same process over the last few years. And last year, late in the spring, we through the city was informed that they were doing this incorrectly and so had to pay back some money and do some things. So what we're doing today is hopefully trying to correct that, trying to deal with the retroactive for the payment that was made, but also to look forward and have a working group that would help to review the history and review and understand what actually happened. And perhaps there are other fire departments and cities that are in the same position. So hopefully we could have the working group meet and be able to give us further guidance.
Thank you. Senator Sparks, any comments? Or
Madam Chair, appreciate the opportunity to come before you this evening. I thank you, Madam Chair, and other members of the committee. This is an issue that we've been working on for over the past year, and I cannot tell you how much we appreciate the hard work of the Pension Commission staff for their work to try to help explain this in terms that we all understand. I know that we're waiting for a quorum to show up. I believe that we do have an A1 amendment that will help kind of bring some peace in the valley, and hopefully we can take some action on this bill yet tonight. But again, we just really do appreciate the opportunity to be before you tonight. And with that, I think Mr. Dankert maybe could add a few more things to help clarify, but thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator Sparks. Oh, great. And we do have a quorum. So thank you, Senator Pappas. Senator Sparks, would you like to introduce the 1A amendment or Mr. Dankert first and have him talk?
I think that would help to kind of get the bill in the shape that we'd like it, Madam Chair. And then I think after that, if someone's willing to move that, we certainly would be able to talk to the bill at that point.
Actually, I think I'll have Ms. Lincheski or... See. Oh, no. Ms. Barth, explain the 1A amendment, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So the 1A amendment creates a fire state aid work group to look at the issue of allocating fire state aid to para police and fire employer contributions on a statewide level. So that's currently what Austin is doing just within the city of Austin. So this looks at the issue on a statewide level because there are a number of combination fire departments, which means a fire department has both volunteer or paid on-call firefighters, as well as firefighters that are in the para PNF plan, that may be interested in this issue and in possibly allocating fire state aid to para PNF. So the work group will be convened by para, and various stakeholders will be appointed to provide recommendations on the issue, and if the work group recommends such allocation, how that allocation is determined and monitored. So the amendment also provides just additional clarifying language that the City of Austin does not owe the Relief Association this back payment. And it also just kind of works with the repealer of the initial bill and how it's going to move forward.
Any questions on the 1A amendment? Senator St. John.
Madam President, appropriate time, I would move Senate File 26 with the 1A amendment.
Thank you. I appreciate that, Senator St. John. Let's vote on the 1A amendment at this time, though. All those in favor of the 1A amendment? Representative Murphy.
Madam Chair, Ms. Barth, would this allow any municipality that would we have to get the report from the state fires work group completed before any municipality could raise the pensions of their work, their own municipality, volunteer fire departments, relief, the amount that they were to get?
Ms. Barth?
Madam Chair and Representative Murphy, I'm sorry, could you please clarify, do you mean the maximums that a relief association can offer, or do you mean the allocation?
Correct.
That issue is not dealt with in this bill or this amendment. I think that will be an issue that we deal with later in the meeting.
Like on item 5?
Item 5.
Yes.
Representative
Murphy.
Okay. Right.
Yes.
Right.
Yep, absolutely. This is a separate issue. Representative Murphy.
I think this, the 1A is fairly,
and
just to clean
and
up.
This is...
Representative Murphy.
This is totally limited to what? In 1A.
Austin.
Just Austin. Okay.
Madam Chair and
Ms. Barth.
Representative Murphy, it's a study group that looks at how Austin is handling fire state aid right now and looks at it on a statewide level, whether or not it seems appropriate on a statewide level for combination fire departments to allocate fire state aid to pay para PNF employer contributions. That's what this 1A amendment does, is put this group together to study the issue and report back to the commission so the commission can then make a very informed policy decision on how to go forward with the issue.
Because we like to make informed policy decisions. Thank you.
Well, before we vote on the 1A amendment, I do have a question. Maybe Mr. Danker could explain why Austin was not aware of this in 2013. What happened in 2013?
Madam Chair and members of the Commission, the City of Austin has been allocating this state aid based on what happened in the late 90s, which is where our full-time firefighter and police pensions were merged into the PERA system that allowed us to allocate this out. 2013, 14, and 15, we went through the normal process, never had any information that the statute had changed. I hadn't seen any information that the statute had changed. We went through our regular audit. We went through our regular reporting with the Office of State Auditor and thought everything was fine because we always got the blessing and got our state aid certified for the next following year. So until we received notification in March of 2016, we always thought we were doing what was allowed under the old statute until we were informed that that statute doesn't exist anymore. And, oh, by the way, you owe back a whole lot of money. That's when it became an issue for the City of Austin.
I see. And your opinion of the 1A amendment, Mr. Dankert?
The 1A amendment would be great for the City of Austin and our taxpayers, and I think the working group makes a lot of sense for us and at least gives us some time to figure out what we need to do and help Test Fire do whatever we need to do on a statewide basis. And, in July of 2018, if nothing is done and said we can't do this anymore, then the City of Austin will have to look at the ramifications then. But for us, this is going to be great to at least get us through that time frame and the back amounts owed.
Mr. Danker, did you mention your name for the record? I'm sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Position? Yeah.
Tom Dankert, Administrative Services Director for the City of Austin.
Thank you. Further questions for either Mr. Dankert or on the 1A amendment? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, nay. Motion prevails. 1A amendment is adopted. We also have the 2A amendment, members, that will be passed out. And Ms. Barth, if you would like to explain that, I think it's... I'll let you explain it. Ms. Barth.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So the 2A amendment just amends the 1A amendment, and on line, sorry. So 2.5 on the 1A amendment, it talks about the fire chief that needs to be appointed to the work group. And so the 2A amendment adds one more fire chief representative for a total of two and clarifies that the representatives must be chiefs from combination fire departments. So again, fire departments that have both volunteer firefighters or paid on-call firefighters and firefighters in the para-PNF plan. It's just to make sure that the fire chiefs that are appointed are fire chiefs where this is actually potentially an issue within their fire department.
Fully represented. Is there any questions on the 2A amendment? Senator Pappas?
I'll move the 2A amendment.
Thank you, Senator Pappas. She moves the 2A amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Nay. Motion prevails. 2A amendment is adopted. With that, we have Senate File 26, House File 11 in order. Is there any further comments? So I'm wondering if the State Auditor, the Office of State Auditor is here and would like to comment on that. Okay. If you don't mind, thank you, Senator Sparks.
Thank you. Hello, my name is Mark Kerr, K-E-R-R. I'm an attorney with the Office of the State Auditor.
Well, welcome, Mr. Kerr. Thank you.
Thank you.
Your opinion on the amended Senate File 26?
We're neutral on the bill, but it would resolve the last remaining issue our office has regarding their compliance. I understand there's some timing issues about getting it approved by the city and things like that, but this would resolve the problem.
Okay. Representative O'Driscoll?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I would just like to call out Representative Poppy and Senator Sparks on this. They came to me probably while there was grass growing and the food trucks are out front. For those of you who are Capitol watchers, know what time of the season that was. And trying to figure this out, and there was just no way that we could work through this. And I appreciate their patience and the city of Austin's patience. And Madam Chair, if I could, I'd like to just ask Mr. Dankert a couple of questions about city administration and operations. Absolutely. As it relates to the audit.
Yes, please.
Mr. Dankert, the city of Austin, my assumption is, much like it was in the city of Sartell, we would hire a CPA audit firm that would come in experienced and qualified to do audits, and the city must have had their records audited for a number of years on that. Am I correct?
Yes, the city of Austin actually has Clifton Larson Allen as their auditors, but the Relief Association uses another accounting firm in Austin, Minnesota, a smaller one, Hill, Larson, Walton, Booz, or in Benda, is the firm that they use for that audit.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Mr. Representative Driscoll.
Mr. Dankert, my assumption would be that that the auditor that the Relief Association hired would have been looking, would have seen something, or would have been have caught this as well. They didn't catch it in years 1, 2, and 3 where we're looking at this. Am I correct on that?
Members of the commission. Members of the commission, yes. I would say that the auditors for the Relief Association had looked at it all those years also as part of their annual audit and the procedures that are actually for legal compliance that's out there that they use.
Representative Driscoll.
Thank you. Mr. Kerr, then it's my understanding that the State Auditor's Office would review the work of those private auditing companies. Am I correct on that?
Mr.
Kerr?
I'm sorry. We received those reports, yes.
Chair.
Representative O'Driscoll.
And then for 3 consecutive years, Mr. Kerr, the work that was done by the City of Austin, the work that was done by their auditor, was reviewed for 3 consecutive years by the State Auditor's Office, and it wasn't until the 3rd year that the Auditor's Office noticed that there was a change in statute that wasn't being complied with Austin. Am I correct on that?
Mr. Kerr.
Yes. As soon as we discovered the issue in 2016, we notified the city, and it was our obligation to let them know about the compliance issue.
Representative Driscoll.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Kerr, there is a sizable amount of fines that have been levied against the City of Austin by the Auditor's Office on this, too. Am I correct?
Mr. Kerr.
No, there are no fines. And, in fact, no state aid has been lost. It's just been delayed at this point. And, as I said, this bill would resolve the problem as far as our office is concerned.
Representative Driscoll.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Kerr, maybe I misspoke when I said that there were fines. The city's not receiving some of the state aid, which would cause them a problem in their funding and their local municipal operations as a result of this. So the city's been somewhat disadvantaged on something that they weren't aware of, that their auditor didn't catch it, nor did the Office of the State Auditor catch it. Would that be more fairly characterized?
I think that's true.
Mr. Kerr.
It's been delayed. I apologize.
Okay.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I do have sympathy for the city of Austin on this, and I've been trying to help and work with Senator Sparks and with Representative Poppy on this. And members, I just wanted to give you a little bit of background on this because these are the things that we were looking at last year and trying to get resolved. And although we're not there, we're sure a lot closer this year on this, and I would certainly like to see the city of Austin's name put back in good stead with not only the auditor's office, but with the legislature having to have an issue like this for a potential blemish. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Driscoll. Yes. Final comments? Questions? Mr. Rice? Okay.
Madam Chair, Brian Rice. I represent the Minnesota Professional Firefighters. I was not aware of this working group idea, and I wouldn't suggest anything tonight, but another group that would be affected by this that's not on the working group are the full-time firefighters. I haven't had a chance to talk to Mr. Parsons, the president of that organization, to see if they'd have any interest in this. But if the working group is going to make recommendations for allocation between the volunteer relief associations, which is certainly appropriate, another stakeholder in this would be the full-time firefighters that, for example, in Austin, we have some full-time firefighters there, and I know this is an issue. I think you're going to find as this working group gets in there, there's a number of combination departments around the state that have both paid and volunteers now working together. So if the commission and you as chair could leave that issue open for possible later amendment, we'd appreciate that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, Mr. Rice. Any questions for Mr. Rice? Okay, thank you, Mr. Rice. We certainly will. And I know Representative Anderson has a question. Mr. Danker, could you please come back up? Senator Anderson, or Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this is for Mr. Kerr. So it took 3 years for the auditor to identify this as a problem. Have you done any review of all the cities that would be doing this to verify that there aren't any other cities that are in the same predicament as Austin?
Mr. Kerr?
I believe this is the only one. I could verify that for you and get back to you, but I believe this is the only one.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Kerr, I think that would be helpful because right now what we're doing is it's $200,000, over $200,000 for the city of Austin, and no blame to them. You were just doing what you normally do, and this is why we have an audit system in place, is to catch some of these things. And I'm just concerned that it took 3 years for this to be identified, and I want to find out from the auditor what steps they have taken to verify that this has not been taking place in any other city, and that we're not going to see more bills like this to address problems for others as well.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. Mr. Kirk?
Yes, well, I'll do that, and I'll get back to you.
Is that something that you get back to in the entire Legislative Commission on Pensions, and perhaps to both state gov chairs? Yeah. Would appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Vogel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to Mr. Kerr, I remember when we were talking to Auditor Otto at the state government finance meetings that asking her, there was $100,000 transferred out of the state auditor's, the pension oversight division. I'm wondering if that had anything to do with short staffing or if anything could have happened that maybe wouldn't have happened had that money not been transferred.
Mr. Kerr?
I can't answer that.
Representative Vogel.
Madam Chair, well, Mr. Kerr, maybe if you could also get that information because, these are big, huge sums of money, and I know when I was going through the books and looking at that, that bothered me a lot to see that there was that money taken out and I think put someplace else, maybe came back. But if in the interim we were short on staff and missed stuff like this, kind of paralleling on Representative Anderson's question, is somebody else in the same boat and we just don't know it yet, and that's very concerning. So any information that you could provide on that would be really helpful. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Kerr.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Vogel. Any other further questions? Representative O'Driscoll?
I was going to let this go, and then there was that pause, and it just gave me cause to ask one more question of Mr. Kerr. The way you answered the question. Madam Chair, is he out of order? One of the way you answered the question, Representative Vogel talked about the 100,000. You said, "I can't answer that." Is that because you've been directed not to answer that, or is it because you just don't know the answer to that? And I always get concerned when people answer a question that way. I can't answer that with no further follow-up. What does that mean?
Mr. Kerr.
It just means I don't know.
Thank you. That's what I was hoping it meant, but I just wanted to, for the record, so I could sleep better tonight.
So, Mr. Curl, you will go back to the state auditor and find this information out, because I think these are very valid questions that we need to find out, especially where the money went. Is there more money that needs to be appropriated for these cities that perhaps have the same problem? So, appreciate that. With that, Senator Senjum moves that Senate File 26, House File 11, as amended, be recommended to pass and incorporated into the Omnibus Pension Bill. Further questions? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Poppy, Senator Sparks, and Mr. Denkert. Thank you, Mr. Kerr.
Thank you, members.
We have Senate File 1945, Senator Lori, and House File 2092, Representative Rayrick. Oh, that's wonderful. Yes, thank you. Any questions on the minutes now that we have a quorum? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative O'Driscoll. Good evening.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you for your continued
service on the Pensions Commission. I know we've missed you many times on many Health and Human Services committees, and you said, I'm on pensions.
I love it. I do. Seriously. I seriously do. Representative Rayrick. Rayrick. Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam.
So we have House File 1945 and House File 2092, Senate File 1945. Would you like to explain that, either one of you?
All right. Thank you, Madam Chair. This is an issue that was brought to me. I was asked to come to the Brook Park City Council meeting. They were looking at increasing the pension fund for their volunteer fire department, and were told that they could basically triple the amount of the pension at no extra cost to the city. They needed to do that in about a month's time. They did that, and looking into it further, they realized that they had not looked at all the details, that this was actually going to cost the city quite a bit. The fire chief was there at the meeting and a number of the firefighters, and they were all in agreement asking that they would be able to bring it back. The city is committed to raising the pension, but at a level that they can afford. They just found out that this was not something that the city could afford.
Thank you. Senator Lori?
Well, and Madam Chair, so what the bill, and this was a change that was in effect of January 1st, 2016, and no one would be eligible for this increased amount of $1,200 until after the five-year vesting period. So no one has actually been able to secure this yet, and it's fairly close in time to the point at which this decision was made without really a full understanding. And so what they're asking for is a one-time ability to change from going from a $400 pension amount to a $1,200 pension amount. What they didn't realize is that as soon as any volunteer firefighter under this arrangement is vested, it is essentially that $1,200 is both prospective and retrospective and accrues a much larger cost than was anticipated. So as Representative Rarick represented, they do still want to increase the pensions for their volunteer firefighters, but going from the prior 400 to 600 makes a lot more sense for them, and the city and the firefighters are both in complete agreement that this would bring it much closer into line with both their finances and their intent.
Thank you. Do you have either the mayor or the clerk treasurer here to testify, if they'd like to mention anything? And how many, either one of you like to come up and say a few words?
Senator Lori, how many firefighters are we talking, and how big is the community of Brook Park?
Well, Brook Park, I mean, if you blink, you know, you're on the other side of it, on Highway 23, and you know exactly how many firefighters they have, volunteer firefighters.
We have 18 right now.
Okay. 18. Okay. And please state your name for the record.
My name is Becky Conyers, and I'm the clerk treasurer for the city of Brook Park.
Great. Can you pull that microphone towards you?
Sure.
Thank you very much. Welcome, Ms. Connors. Anything that you'd like to say about this?
I would just like to, when we went into this, we kind of looked through it, and the numbers that were presented to us, we thought were numbers that as each firefighter retired, at this point, when they presented everything, it would go as each firefighter went out at the age of 50. And when we started looking at our numbers, we could have 7 firefighters go out at one time after this 5-year period. And it, our numbers, it was staggering to us. Our thoughts, and this is something that we would like to put out there for other small towns and stuff who are looking into this, we did not have much. We'd asked to have people come ahead of time from PIRA and explain everything to us, and we could never get anybody there. And so everything was kind of after the fact, going through numbers and finding out that things were not what we were brought to us at the beginning. And so at this time, we have 5 firefighters that can go out in the 5 years, and that could almost deplete our funds, so there will be nothing left for to gain on for the rest of our firefighters as they come in.
Okay. Any questions for Ms. Connors? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Connors, has the fire chief or any of the firefighters expressed that they are going to leave because of the change, or are they comfortable with the change and are going to stick with the city?
They are comfortable with the change, and our fire chief is here also if you'd like to speak to him.
Okay. Representative Anderson. Good. Okay. Oh. Senator Schoen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is just for an educational experience. Is this a commonplace in this particular plan setting with the volunteer the volunteer firefighter relief pensions or fund, right? Is that what, am I saying it right? I get it confused. But so it, would this be a common move? Has this been done before? Or?
Actually, we should have PARA come up and mention that. This is our volunteer fire relief night, and so we deal with a lot of these special issues of things that happened perhaps because of misinformation.
And don't take my questions as I'm against it. I'm just learning. Right. So,
but it is this is where we figure out the puzzle. And with that, I think I will bring up Ms. Jones from PARA, if she could come up, please, or Mr. Anderson. Or both. Thank you, Ms. Connors.
I'm Doug Anderson, Executive Director of Public Employee Retirement Association.
Shana Welcome. Jones, Policy Director, PERA.
Welcome.
And we'll address the question shortly. But just for background, the statewide volunteer firefighter plan has been around for 7 years. It's grown pretty rapidly, up to 142 funds in the plan now. It's about 20 new plans coming in every year, and the implementation's gone actually pretty smooth to this point. The issue raised by Brook Park is the first question to our knowledge about reducing benefit levels, and it's a good question, and we don't oppose their request, but it has raised some broader issues for us. We would want to just acknowledge that these 142 funds are really like 142 separate defined benefit plans. So while this is a lump sum benefit at retirement, this is still a plan that's subject to investment risk, so there's market volatility. And with that, it just comes concern that there is the potential that in the future a unexpected contribution could arise, which would lead others to question, is there a potential that a benefit level decrease, does that exist? Should it be allowed to exist, and so forth? So, you know, acknowledging that this is a unique issue at the moment to Brook Park raised to us, but it does just raise questions to us about how it might be impacting the other plans, other funds in this plan more broadly, as well as how we do some of the communications about what the risks are to each of these funds as they enter the plan. With that, and recognizing that with Brook Park, that the benefit, the higher benefit level doesn't vest until, I think, January 2021, we would like to have some time to engage with them specifically, as well as to consult with our advisory board. So the PARA has a SVF advisory board that our board relies upon for specific advice on issues like this, and we haven't raised this specific question with them. We'd like the opportunity to do so. Okay.
Ms. Jones, comment?
Madam Chair, he covered it.
Okay, Senator Schoen, and then Senator
Powell. Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, it'll be a couple things. First, could you give me, I thought I heard you say something about an unexpected contribution, and I don't have, could you maybe, instead of me saying I don't have a clue what you meant by that, could you give me a little example, maybe, of what you mean by that?
Sure. Mr. Anderson.
Madam Chair, Senator Schoen, this is, being a defined benefit plan, this plan provides a fixed lump sum to the different members at their retirement. The plan has investments with the State Board of Investment. It is more conservative than we see with the other funds, but there still is investment risk involved with that fund. So, like we've talked about with the larger funds, there's a lot of assumptions that go in to evaluate what the liability is for each fund and what the assets are in each fund. And if those assumptions aren't met, so for example, if we have another recession, you know, while these funds are more conservatively invested, they still could see a drop in their asset value in 1 year. So if that happens and a new evaluation is done, the level of liability may not change from 1 year to the next, but the asset value would be less, in which case the potential for a contribution, either a fund that wasn't requiring a contribution or one that had a contribution, could see an increase to their level. So it's not expected. The expectation is that the assumptions are met, but if the assumptions aren't met, there is the potential for a contribution increase for any one of these plans.
Senator Schoen.
Madam Chair and Mr. Anderson, did you, in your comments, are you saying that you would like us to not necessarily take action at the moment and have further discussion with them? Is that what you said?
Mr.
You want
Anderson?
More time to discuss the actual ramifications?
Madam Chair, Senator Schoen, yes, we would like time to both engage with Brook Park to talk about their specific situation, but also to consider the potential impact that could happen to all the different funds that are involved. So while this question may raise if it's allowed for one of the funds to reduce benefit level, you know, what does that mean for the other 140 funds and under what circumstances that would be? And as I mentioned, we have an advisory board that advises the PARA's board specifically on volunteer firefighter issues, and they've been very valuable in assessing questions like this before. And we'd like that opportunity to engage with them to get their thoughts in the process.
Senator Lurie.
Madam Chair, well, I zoomed in on another comment that was made, was that you didn't oppose this provision. So I'm trying to figure out what would be the process going forward. Where the commission tonight, I heard your motion on the last one, and I'm not entirely familiar with how you work here either, but the motion on the last one was to include in the pension bill,
in
the omnibus pension bill. And, you know, I think, you know, Brook Park is in quite a fix here if they, you know, potentially if we don't act and needs to do some real fiscal planning. And I don't want an undue delay on this. I mean, I think some of this work could go on as well, and work simultaneously and still give Brook Park this relief would be my druthers.
Senator Pappas and then Senator Jasinski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think we need to state that if we allow this for Brook Park, that we don't want it to be a precedent, that the reason for allowing it is because they made a mistake, not because we think it's a good idea to reduce benefits. And I understand through some of the staff comments that the inability to lower the service pension level could be viewed as a way to protect volunteer firefighters in the absence of a board of trustees. So I think that we want to be very cautious here. I think in this case, the firefighters, I'm told, and please if there's someone here to disagree with this, have realized that there was a mistake made. We don't want to bankrupt the city. We don't want to impact the future ability for them to provide this lump sum benefit to other firefighters as they retire because the city's in debt or whatever. But I am nervous too about setting a precedent for the future if, you know, all the other cities come in and just say they also want some kind of relief here.
Senator Jasinski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And again, just trying to get up to speed on this pensions committee. So we've talked in other pensions about the 8% going to 7.5%. Is this affected by that of watching? You talked about assumptions, and is that the rate of return? Is it the same 8% we're looking at going to 7.5%, and maybe that's more to staff?
Or Mr. Anderson?
Madam Chair, Senator Jasinski, the assumption for the SVF plan is 6%. And the reason for the difference in the assumption compared to the combined funds assumption is a different asset allocation. So it's less invested in equities, more in bonds. So it's more conservative. And there is not currently a proposal to change the 6% assumption.
Senator Laurie, comments?
And Madam Chair, to Senator Pappas's point, I too read the concerns that staff laid out, and this was actually you guys do really great work, and I want to commend the staff for this together.
Staff.
The precedent, the concerns around precedent are well-founded, and making sure that firefighters are protected in their pensions and that it is not at the sole discretion of the municipality without a voice of the firefighter is something that I actually do wish to fully support as well. In this instance, we do have the voice of the firefighter fully engaged in understanding, as Senator Pappas mentioned, that this was a mistake that I would like to see fixed. And if there's a way you can couch that and both protect it from the precedent and continue with the work that was mentioned by Mr. Anderson and actually come up with a better communication protocol so that a mistake doesn't happen again, that smaller municipalities like this really have a full understanding of what it is they're putting in place and just making sure that this doesn't happen again and that we have a plan in place. I would be fully in support of trying to accomplish that, but I would like for my small community to have the financial assurance of moving forward knowing what their potential liabilities are. It's a very, very small community with a very small
Very small is 137 population. That is very small.
Right.
And
that's
what most of my district is,
right.
Senator Laurie. So it is purely volunteerism to serve as mayor or city clerk. You do it because you love the community. And we do have a former mayor around the table here. Fully understand that. I think you make a pretty good point, Senator Laurie, that perhaps this is something that the communication ongoing can be worked on in the summer just to make sure that this issue needs to be taken care of. Before I go to Ms. Barth, Representative Vogel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just curious, I'm not sure which one of the testifiers might be able to answer, but how did the information get disseminated in the first place to make the mistake? Where did that come from?
Mr. Anderson.
Madam Chair, Representative Vogel, it's my understanding is that when a fire department seeks to join the statewide volunteer firefighter plan, they make a request to PARA for a cost estimate. And then the cost estimate, it's in the form of a letter, shows different benefit levels that are available. It shows the assets that are currently in that plan. It shows the liability and goes on to demonstrate what the potential cost is, again, really under one set of assumptions. So that's information that comes from PARA, and then PARA does offer to do follow-up communication with each requesting entity. So we did have, I believe, 70 different requests in 2016, which about 30 actually joined the plan. I don't know the exact number in which we engaged with them in dialogue between the formal letter request and the final decision. I understand it to be most of them, but I don't have a more precise number.
Representative Vogel.
Madam Chair, thank you. Well, the concern you can see is that are there others that are going to be affected because we have a flaw in the process? And I guess kind of continuing a little bit on our conversation from the past testifier, should that have been picked up in an audit? Because we're looking at it to be actuarially sound.
Comments? Mr. Anderson.
Madam Chair, Representative Vogel. I think that the communication that's given is consistent with the statutes and the assumptions for the plan. I would acknowledge that I think with anything there's an opportunity for maybe better communication, particularly, and this is just my opinion, wanting to, if you're talking about someone about entering a plan that has some risks involved, specifically investment risk, there's potential that you would want to expand and talk about what those risks are. So could we work on improving the communication? I'm certain that we can, and we'd want to do that. The speed at which this plan has kind of ramped up over the years has been pretty fast, and at times for staff a bit challenging. So I recognize that I think that's going to continue going forward. They're going to have a lot more entities coming in, and we want to do a good job to make sure that they understand what's happening. So this is the first of 142 that asked this question. It would be our goal that it would be the last one to ask this question.
Absolutely. Madam Chair, just one more follow-up then. I guess I'd appreciate, as we're going to go through this idea exchange, that we probably address that because, quite honestly, I'm probably more concerned about what might be out there that we don't know than what we do know now. So I think it's really important that we address everything here. And I'm not concerned about the rate of return as much as I am about the actuarial assumptions.
Something that could be worked on over the interim, perhaps. Senator Schoen.
I just had a really quick question, Madam Chair. And Senator Lawyer, I don't know if you know or we have to ask the mayor, when was this decision made to raise the lump sum to that high amount? Do you know when that happened?
Senator Lawyer.
Madam Chair, it would have been effective January 1, 2016, would have started the five-year vesting period. So no
the decision
one
was made in 2015.
Until 2021.
I'm sorry.
2021 is when the first firefighters would vest.
My question was, when do they decide to do that? What was it in 2015 or 2014?
It was December of 2015.
Okay, thank you.
Madam Chair.
2015. Okay. Senator Schoen, and then Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Anderson, hopefully I heard this correctly. You said that 142 showed interest, but only 30 participated. Is that correct?
Mr. Anderson?
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, currently we have 142 that participate in the plan. In 2016, there were 70 that expressed interest in joining. And of that 70 or so, it was about 30 that joined. So the 142 that currently exists includes the 30 that joined in 2016.
And Madam Chair.
Representative Anderson.
And Mr. Anderson, so do we know the 30 that they are fully formed now, given what happened at Brook Park? Has there been any, kind of go off of what Representative Vogel, has there been any check back with them to see that they understand fully what the implications are?
Representative
Anderson. Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, no, the issue with Brook Park has not been communicated beyond to the other funds.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would just think that it might be, to get to what Representative Vogel is saying, I think that might be helpful to make sure we are not finding a big can of worms here, too.
Right. Mr. Anderson. Okay. Representative Murphy.
Mr. Anderson, then, the 40 that didn't join the state plan, then will your study include them? And could those 40 be making the same mistake that Brook Park did and want to go backward?
Representative,
if their city said, oh, we can't afford this?
Mr. Anderson.
Madam Chair, Representative Murphy, I'm not aware, and I don't think we would know the reasons that the 40 that chose not to join, I don't think we know the reason that they would have made that decision.
Representative Murphy.
So will, Mr. Anderson, will this, if you are doing this work in the summertime, will you do it as if 172 plans joined, or will you do it as if just the people that really did join joined?
Mr. Anderson.
Madam Chair, Representative Murphy, I believe our intent, and I would view this as an opportunity for education for all of the funds, both those that are currently in the statewide plan and those that would be considering joining. So I think this is really an opportunity to provide education, to expand on what we've done before, and we would want to try to reach out so that it was clear what benefits are available and to what extent that they can be changed.
Representative Murphy.
I'm comfortable with that.
Okay, wonderful. Ms. Barth, do you have anything that you'd like to, before further questions?
Madam Chair, not specifically, unless anybody has any questions.
Okay. Senator Schoen?
Madam Chair, I was just going to move the bill.
Okay. Further comments by Representative Rayrick and Senator Lurie?
Madam Chair, members, I just really appreciate you taking the time to look at this. I agree with Senator Lurie. I'm really hoping that you can move forward with this tonight. I do really appreciate Senator Pappas's comments about making sure that maybe it's noted or something that this was just a mistake and that we're not setting a precedent. But I really hope we can help out the city of Brook Park tonight.
Thank you. Senator Lurie.
Appreciate members' consideration.
Great. And so, members, I think this will be laid over to be incorporated in the omnibus pension bill, and perhaps we should focus on maybe a summer work group. We could all get together. I'm just joking. But we could do some work and have Para do some work on this issue. I think we'd all feel comfortable with that. Senator Schoen moves that Senate File 1945 and House File 2092 be recommended to pass and be incorporated into the omnibus pension bill. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed nay. Motion prevails.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Thank you very much. You too. Members, we have a non-action item, and that is number four of our packet, requiring the municipal ratification of benefit increases by volunteer firefighter and relief associations. Let me just start with you. Yes. So we'll start with Ms. Lincheski and give an overview and why she is doing that. Can we have Mr. Luger, Ms. Rowan, and Mr. Wrights come up, please? And then we also have Mr. Fisher from the City of Plymouth, and we will get to him also. Okay.
Thank you.
Ms. Lincheski.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator Rosen. In your materials, you have the section from an excerpt, actually, from the omnibus bill that was approved a few weeks ago by the Pension Commission. So this is the bill, which runs, I don't know, 60 pages or something, and this is just Article 7, Section 6. And this is the section of the bill that raises the lump sum maximum from $10,000 to $15,000 for lump sum benefit, defined benefit pension plans that are run by volunteer firefighter relief associations. In addition, in your packet is a draft bill that changes the requirements for when an increase in pension benefits needs to be ratified by the municipality. And they're not exactly connected, except for that if a Volunteer Firefighter Relief Association decides to increase its benefits, really by any amount, and amends its bylaws to do that, it may in certain circumstances have to get the municipality to ratify that increase. So the increase in the lump sum benefits, this issue could come up going from 6,000 lump sum to 7,000 lump sum. And so the ratification issue is actually addressed in the draft bill. And the draft bill changes the requirement for municipal ratification to one, and I'll misstate this if I don't look at my notes here, but in certain circumstances, and I've laid those out, ratification is required if the relief association does not have a surplus in its funding and the municipality is required to provide financial support. Ratification under current law is not required if the relief association has a surplus and the municipality is not required to provide financial support. The law then would, the draft bill would change the law to require municipal ratification in cases where the municipality does make a contribution of whether it's required or not. If it does make a contribution, it then has sort of veto power over a benefit increase. So that's the change in the law, and we're treating this as a discussion item because I think this is a kind of a hot topic. I think this the change in the law would take away some rights that the relief associations have right now to increase benefits without going to their city to get that approved.
Okay. Questions on that? Then Mr. Luger, president of Eden Prairie Firefighter Relief Association, Lieutenant. Ms. Rowan.
Madam Chair, commission members, my name is Robin Rowan. I'm here on behalf of the Eden Prairie Firefighter Relief Association. We thought it might be helpful, since we were the source of the original legislation increasing the lump sum, to provide some background on why we wanted to do it and how it came about. Originally, when this legislation was brought forward last February by Representative Loon and Senator Han, it was Eden Prairie specific. Eden Prairie was already at the $10,000 max and had the adequate funding, and they felt that increasing the lump sum was important for two reasons. The first was that they offer a lump sum and a monthly benefit option, but they were not competitive and they wanted to attract people to the lump sum benefit because that's better for the long-term stability of the fund. But perhaps even more importantly was the issue of recruitment and retention of volunteer firefighters, which, as you know, is a challenge. When we brought this forward, it turned out that there were other relief associations that were close to the max, and so the commission determined last year to expand the applicability of the increase to all plans. Mr. Luger would like to provide some additional detail.
Thank you, Ms. Rowan. Mr. Luger, if you could please state your name for the record.
Sure. My name is Michael Luger. I'm the president of the Eden Prairie Fire Relief Association and a member of the Eden Prairie Fire Department. Madam Chair, thank you, and the committee members, thank you for this opportunity to appear before you today. For us, this the increase in the lump sum amount from $10,000 to $15,000 really just starts a dialogue. It doesn't actually cause an immediate increase. It will start a dialogue where we'll go back to our city and go back to our membership, and we'll do an actuarial study, and we'll discuss whether this makes sense or not. And this is important for us because it is one of our big pieces of recruitment and retention. In today's day and age, it's becoming increasingly difficult to retain and attract the firefighters to the job.
Thank you. Any questions for either one of those? Mr. Rice, welcome again.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Brian Rice, attorney in Minneapolis. I'm here today on behalf of the Maplewood Volunteer Firefighters Relief Association. Really more in context, and I feel a little bit like the carts before the horse on this one, because as I understand it, over the last day or two, I've been making some phone calls. I think this provision is coming largely because of Mr. Lucas from the city of Plymouth has some concerns about the bill and maybe some particular facts surrounding the Plymouth Relief Association, but I'll try to fit my comments in with Robin's. What she said is accurate. Eden Prairie came forward with a bill last year. Maplewood also had a bill, and the two got merged to raise the caps on these volunteer firefighter pension plans. The last time those caps were raised was back in 2007. The Great Recession hit, funding shrunk, return on assets dropped, and people weren't really able to raise maximums at all on these pensions. And so time goes on, the economy recovers, people start pushing up on these caps, and funding's gotten improved. There was an effort in the legislature back in 2013. Representative, then Speaker Thiessen, worked on this issue for us, increased volunteer firefighting around the state, put some more money in because we had seen a slippage in the amount of money that's gone into these plans through the these volunteer fire funds plans are funded through the insurance tax on fire loss that homeowners pay. Buildings have gotten more efficient, fewer fires, the insurance premium dollars collected from that have dropped. That's the way you fund the volunteer firefighters in this state. There's about 18,000 firefighters around the state. There's about 2,000 full-time firefighters. The best deal this state gets for public service is volunteer firefighters. We're 45th or 46th in the nation on what you spend on firefighters. And that's largely because of volunteers like Mr. Luger and people that I represent. The main source of their compensation comes from this state insurance tax and the $4.5 million that the legislature approved in 2013 or 2014 in a bill that Representative Murphy carried and Speaker Thiessen helped us accomplish. That $4.5 million supplemented that money and gave a modest increase in these amounts. What's before you in this amendment or bill that apparently the city of Plymouth wants to do would undo pension legislation that's been around for 40 years. And the deal has been this. The money goes to the volunteers for the work they do. The volunteers get the money. There's a very strict actuarial standard that that all these funds have to follow. It's a fairly simplistic but very dependable means of an actuary study. You basically have to pay for these benefits. They're accrued on a formula. Some are cliff-vested. Most of them have some sort of earned vesting level, usually after 5 or 10 years. The accrual rate to this dollar amount, let's say it's $5,000 a year for each year of service. Usually it's after 10 years, you'll get 50% vested, and it will grow up to 20% at 100%. And it's a fairly simple formula. You set aside the money as you earn it. Investments are assumed to accrue at 5% a year. We've had a lot of talk about what their correct discount rate is or the assumed investment rate of return is. The volunteers operate on 5%, very conservative. As a banker, Representative Vogel would probably appreciate that. Even that might seem high, but it's a fairly low bar to jump over. If you could get all the pension funds in the state at 5%, you'd have gold in Fort Knox in terms of how these assets are managed. So it's pretty conservative, and these volunteers can only spend up to 90% of their assets to set the benefit level. And, you know, and so what these plans do is they can do that, and then when they set the level, they try to work with the city, and the city, if they guarantee the benefit level, the city is basically signing on the dotted line. If something goes bad, the city is going to tax their property owners to make up the benefit if something goes bad. A lot of cities don't do that, surprisingly. And so the volunteers have the money comes in, and they can set the level up to a high number. But sometimes the cities say no. And again, I don't really want to. I talked to Aaron Morris today. Aaron's the president of the Plymouth Volunteer Firefighters Relief Association. And let's just say I spent every minute from Minneapolis to St. Paul in rush hour talking about the particulars of the city of Plymouth. And let's just say it's probably not a discussion that's worthy of the Pension Commission's time about who said what and who did what to whom when. But I would say that as a matter of making policy for pensions, this has been a long... Let me get back to the point. Cities can ratify these benefits and sign on the dotted line and take a municipal action, and if they promise $5,000 a year per year of service, they have to pony up if everything goes bad. On the other hand, the legislature has allowed these relief associations that have typically there are six members and there's three city members. The chief of the fire department, the mayor, and the chief financial officer are the board of directors to decide these benefits. The relief associations can have the option under current law and have had since before I started lobbying 35 years ago the right to set their own benefit, but they take the risk then. If they have the money under the financial reports they do and the actuary reports they get, they can set a higher level within the state overall maximum. But if the money disappears or something happens, the benefit is not guaranteed. And I've literally been in the boardrooms of these associations, and there's quite a hell. If the city's not willing to sign on, there's usually a pretty hot debate between the old guys and the young guys, or the older folks and a lot of women on more women on the department, and they'll have a discussion, what should the level be? And the younger people are afraid, well, if we set it too high and, you know, Rice goes out and gets his pension next year, is there anything going to be left for me? And there's a number of relief associations around the state. I talked to Niall Zickman, with the head of the State Fire Chiefs Association. There's, at least in his experience and my experience, there's probably scores of relief associations that have not been able to get their cities to go along with a higher level, but they've, under law, set the benefit level at a higher amount than within the guidelines that the state permits, that are consistent with their actuarial. They can't exceed 90% of their funding, and so they've done it. And the bill that you've got before you is a pretty radical piece of legislation. It would undo a lot of benefits for a lot of volunteers, and it would undo a practice that's existed in this state for at least 35 years. That's just the way the funds have operated. And the other thing I'd say is this: the last bill you're going to hear tonight, and I'll try to shut up so we can get to that within your permitted time.
We may not get to that
one. Well, it's the volunteer working group, and because the legislature years ago set this, I think Representative Murphy sponsored this or got it going. Issues like this normally get sent to a working group that the state auditor has, where there's League of City people, township people, volunteers, fire department people that has this issue out. I understand that Mr. Lucas is a member of that group. He didn't bring this issue to that group last fall, where the stakeholders could have had a discussion about it and discuss how this issue should have been handled and whether it was worthy of kind of getting a consensus and bringing it before this body for consideration. I think that's where this issue really should reside, in my opinion. People certainly have a right to bring anything before the legislature that they want, but I don't... And the other thing I'd say, I haven't seen the problem. I've represented probably two or three dozen relief associations on matters like volunteers, on matters like this. I'm not aware of a problem that's happened where there's been a fund that set it too high and then the money disappeared and what are we going to do? The parameters that the legislature has set up on these volunteer things are about as conservative a set of investment assumption, actuarial mm-hmm. assumptions that you can have. I guess I'll be interested to hear what the city of Plymouth has, but it'd be the position of Maplewood draft or this non-action, I guess I'd say the non-action item should stay a non-action item until you've actually had some a compelling argument that's brought before the commission that there's a problem out there or that this issue is vetted by the volunteer firefighting working group and you could actually get some reliable information on why this is needed, because in my opinion it's not needed at all, and I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Well, you're certainly not old enough to have all that institutional knowledge, Mr. Rice. You have a lot.
Well, yeah, thank you, or I think.
Yeah. It was kind of a double-sided.
Yeah, I think it was. I think it was. Yeah.
Any questions?
I hit 60 next week, so.
Oh, happy birthday. We'll have to celebrate.
Yeah.
Anybody, any questions? We are going to bring up the city of Plymouth. Mr. Fisher, Luke Fisher. Thank
Good
you,
evening,
Mr.
Madam
Rowe. Thank
Chair.
You, Mr. Luger.
Members of the Commission, thank you very much.
Mr. Fisher.
I'd just like to say thank you to Mr. Rice for calling me a horse before we started. That hasn't happened too frequently. I wanted to share just a
Could
little bit of...
Could you just state your name for the record,
Yep,
please.
I'm Luke Fisher. I'm the Administrative Services Director with the City of Plymouth.
Thank you.
And I wanted to share just a little bit of background sort of about how this became an issue for the City of Plymouth and why it's on our radar right now, and a little bit more about what we're asking. So Mr. Rice is correct. I have been part of the State Auditor's Fire Relief Work Group for the last 2 years. And in the last 2 years, that group has done a lot of really tremendous work to help clarify state statute as it relates to fire relief pensions. The idea of increasing the pension, the lump sum pension amount from $10,000 to $15,000 per year of service was never taken up as a discussion item, specifically with a statewide application for the relief work group. It's my understanding it came before the relief work group as an Eden Prairie provision, but not something that would be applied broadly to the entire state. So from Plymouth's perspective, we didn't know that that had been broadened out during the legislative process last year when that cap was increased in the bill that was ultimately vetoed by the governor. This year, through discussions with our fire relief, we learned that that cap had been increased. And I think for a lot of reasons, the cap has increased for good reason. Obviously, Eden Prairie has a service delivery issue that they're trying to address by adjusting the pension amount. We're supportive of that. We understand that every community's needs are different. But the question for us really comes into who gets some say in when those increases are provided. So in Plymouth, about a year ago, we were providing a lump sum pension amount to our fire department that was municipally ratified at about $8,000 per year of service. Through some discussions with the city, the relief decided to unilaterally make an increase to $9,500 per year of service. In a lot of ways, as a city, we sort of said, okay, we've got the $10,000 cap. We know where our liability could be or where the gap may be at some point in time, so we don't have any major concerns about where we're at, and we can manage this, and we'll continue to work with the relief to hopefully get the city and the relief on the same page to ensure that there's stability for our firefighters. Because from our perspective, the big question with the relief is how do we ensure stability long range within our pension so our firefighters have a predictable benefit amount. We're afraid if the gap increases more than $1,500 or $2,000 per year of service, that we could have service delivery, service provision issues if we saw a large amount of firefighters retire. And obviously, that when that happens, they've got a longer range than we do. It takes years to get firefighters trained and ready to go to provide those services. So our concern is just ensuring that we're able to have some predictability for the pension for our members and some predictability within the membership itself so we can provide the services that we need to. I have heard of benefits that have had to be reduced by municipalities that didn't guarantee or ratify a benefit increase. And I can try and get some information back to the commission if it would like that. But that's where our concern is. Understanding that we don't want to hold up the Eden Prairie provision or the Maplewood provision as the City of Plymouth because they have needs and they have services that they're trying to provide. I don't know if the commissioner would be willing to entertain something that any benefit increase over $10,000 per year of service get municipal ratification so it has time to go back to the state auditor's work group for good vetting to ensure that everyone's interests are sort of accounted for in the policy making. I don't disagree that this is a little bit out of order, and that wasn't the intent, certainly, to limit Eden Prairie or Maplewood's ability to provide those services, but we just want to be part of the discussion and be equal partners at the table when we talk about setting a pension benefit. Be happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Thank you very much, Mr. Fisher. Are there questions? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is more for Ms. Lynch-Heskey.
So I assume that we have several communities that have unratified plans for their volunteer firefighters. Do you have any number on how many are working under an unratified amount?
Ms. Lucheski.
Thank you, Senator Rosen. Representative Anderson, I might actually punt that over to Mr. Fisher. I think he has been involved with this issue and is probably a little more aware of the numbers of fire relief associations that have increased their benefits and not gotten municipal approval.
Mr. Fisher.
Madam Chair, members of the Commission, I don't know.
Representative Anderson.
Madam Chair, would Mr. Rice or Ms. Rowan perhaps have some input on that?
Mr. Rice.
Madam Chair, Representative
Anderson. Of course he does. He have institutional knowledge here.
Well, Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, I will tell you that I'm aware there are several. Niles Zickman is not here, could not be here. The best source of that may be the State Auditor's Office because every relief association has to file with them and catalog it, and they'll determine what the level is. If I could add a point on it, I've been in the room with city managers like Mr. Fisher, and some of those discussions can get rather tense because the city wants to do things, and the cities, quite frankly, look at that. Some city managers do. I don't know about Mr. Lucas. We'll look at that money as though it's their money. I think the volunteers look at it as that's the money the state provided them for the services they worked on. And you can have a lot of debates going on in cities. Now, Plymouth is now, for example, the last I looked at, the city hasn't provided any money to this relief association. The aid is the sole source of funding, and they had $8.5 million in assets and $5.5 million in liabilities. And so a fairly significant surplus. Plymouth is now starting to hire full-time firefighters because they can't get all the volunteers. I think they're up to 6 now, full-time firefighters. That's not unusual in departments. And what sometimes happens then is like the case you saw with Austin. They're fighting about money. Should it go to para to pay our expenses there? Should it go to the volunteers? And some of these discussions can get... Sometimes fire chiefs want more control over their members, and I would really urge the Pension Commission not to get into this issue, or if you want to, it's going to get pretty complicated.
Okay. Representative Anderson, would you like to have Mr. Kerr come up?
I think that might be helpful.
Mr. Kerr?
Thank you. I'm Mark Kerr. Mr. With the Office of the State Auditor. I don't know the answer to the question, how many have raised their benefits without municipal approval, but I can certainly, that can be another thing I can ask about.
Representative Anderson?
Mr. Kerr, I think that would be helpful for us, because out of curiosity, I'd like to know. I'd also like to know what their actuarial report says, too. I assume that the auditor has access to that. I am aware that I think that the Plymouth is at 130%. They have a significant surplus in the pot, as Mr. Rice pointed out. So just I think that would be helpful for us to get a full picture of what we're looking at here.
Mr. Curry, you might want to stay there. Representative Thiessen.
Thank you. Madam Chair, I actually think it would be great to get an idea of how much municipal surpluses in all of these funds, because that might be a good source for you to go to actually fund your budget instead of coming against the city of Minneapolis in the future.
Okay. Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just to switch gears a little bit, I was just thinking about how you're talking about trying to recruit more people to become volunteer firefighters, and I was thinking through the city process that is very transparent, and it might be an opportunity if you did go through the ratification there in a public meeting, you might actually get some more volunteers if they actually know that what kind of benefits they might get.
Thank you. Questions? Is there Mr. Niles Zickman in the room?
He couldn't be here.
Okay. He's one that was I was told could probably answer some of these questions. So, members, are there any further questions for Mr. Fisher, Mr. Rice, Ms. Rowan, Mr. Kerr, Mr. Luger?
Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Pappas.
Madam Chair, as long as we're gathering information, I'm curious to know how many cities and what cities do contribute to the pension funds for their volunteer firefighters and which don't, and, you know, kind of how much they contribute. Because it seems to me if the, you know, it's a stronger case for a city if they're actually contributing, but if they're not contributing, that's kind of a weaker case.
Mr. Kerr, is that something you can give us?
I can certainly ask about it. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'll check and see what we have.
Great. That'd be another growing list to the chairs of both state govs also.
Madam Chair, the state auditor does have a pretty extensive report on that, on contributions by the city and the state aid, and it's an interesting report. Most of the money comes from the state, not the cities, by a huge amount.
Interesting. Very good question, Senator Pappas. I believe we have somebody else that would like to make a few comments.
Madam Chair, members of the commission, my name is Neil Thompson. I represent the Minnesota State Fire Chiefs Association. And if there are questions around recruitment and retention or where some of these issues are, I may be able to try to answer them.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson. Questions? No? Okay. With that, members, I think we're going to lay this over. We're not going to do any action, as it says on the agenda. It was good to get some information. Thank you, Mr. Fisher, for coming. We will continue our discussion. Thank you, Mr. Thompson, Mr. Rice. And members, we only have one more item left. It is an action item. I think I know we have some members that need to leave at 7 to get to their committees. How would you feel that we just lay this over for another time, or would you like to get it started? Lay it over? Okay. I'm just giving you a softball. Okay. And next week we are... Is that Senator Pappas?
No.
Okay. Thank you. Next week we have some action items with just several bills that are coming in. Representative Thiessen, you have one. Representative Murphy, you have one. Senator Schoen, you have one. And then a couple other ones. So we're just going to have a full agenda. We'll start at 5:30, hopefully end at 7 again. Further questions? Okay. Thank you very much. Meeting is adjourned. That's all right. No problem.
We should have this ready.
No.
We have actually the...